Jewelry isn't a gift you give just once. It's a way to remind your loved one of a beautiful moment every time they see it. Blue Nile can help you find the gift that says how you feel and says it beautifully, with expert guidance and a wide assortment of jewelry of the highest quality at the best price. Go to BlueNile.com and experience the convenience of shopping Blue Nile, the original online jeweler since 1999. That's BlueNile.com to find the perfect jewelry gift for any occasion. BlueNile.com.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
You're listening to Blue Jays Nation Radio
with Cam Lewis and Tyler Yaremchuk,
a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts.
Welcome into episode 210 of Blue Jays Nation Radio. Yaremchuk and Coomzy with you. Subscribe wherever you get your podcast from. Subscribe to us on YouTube as well for extra Blue Jays Nation content. Coomzy, oh man, this team, man. I don't know.
I think the Blue Jays are a little bit lucky that the Toronto Maple Leafs have gone ahead and forced a game seven here after going down 3-1, and they've kind of dominated the news cycle a little bit, because if the Leafs were out of the playoffs right now and Toronto's main focus was just on the Blue Jays and how they've looked across, it's not so much the LA Dodgers series that I'm concerned about, but how they looked in these two series against Kansas City. They only won 2 of 7 games across two series. I think they'd be getting, I mean, the media is negative right now around them, but if it was full focus, they'd be taking a beating, because damn, they look really bad, really bad.
Yeah, it is not going well. And like, again, I always play this kind of game where you look at things that have gone on in the season and it's like, hey, if you were to told me like the OPSs for Dalton Varsho and Justin Turner to this point in the season, at the beginning of the year, if you would have been like, hey, this is what it's going to be on May 3rd, I would have been like, oh, hell yeah, like things are going pretty well. And then if you would have been like, oh, by the way, Ken Rosenthal's writing columns about them being sellers, it would have been like, oh, well, so what's exactly going wrong here? It's been a super weird start to the season with the guys who, like, never mind just not contributing and being below average, but their big three have absolutely cratered their offense this year, which is stunning. And we're going to get into it all here, so maybe I shouldn't waste too many of our talking points for three up, three down. But there was a moment at our office in Edmonton where I was, you know, cruising around doing what I do during that series finale, and I looked up, Brett, our producer's watching it on the TV. And I looked and I was like, have you been watching Jays in 30 all day? And he was like, no, this game's on right now. And I was like, oh, well, you could have fooled me, because they were losing 6-1. They had one runner. It was 0-0 at that point or whatever it was against the Royals. And I just assumed it was, again, a replay from the other time they got nearly shut out by the Royals. So that was an ugly, ugly series. Let's not waste any more time. Let's get into it. Three up, three down, Coomzy, and usually we don't do this, but let's get the good point out of the way, because I honestly think there is only one up from this series. Their drought of 5 runs or less is over. They did it in game one. They scored 6 runs and we were all feeling great about where they were heading in that series.
Yeah, we were really excited. It was not quite the beginning of May just yet with this one, but we thought, hey, look at that, you know, end of April, the weather's getting nicer, they're gonna figure it all out. There was 2 home runs from Justin Turner. Danny Jansen hit a solo bomb. Vladdy hit an RBI double. It was the first time since all the way back in that New York series. It was early April. It was right at the beginning of the season. They had, I think, 8 runs and a 9-8 loss to the Yankees. And then after that, it was 20 consecutive games when they scored 5 or fewer runs. And it looked, for a minute, we were like, hey, you know what? Maybe the offense is getting back together. Maybe they're doing their thing. But unfortunately, as we saw in the later games, I guess we'll get to that, because this is supposed to be the positive point. This was like, yeah. In our notes, what we usually do when they've lost a series is I'll write down the negative things first, then we'll find 2 or 3 nice things to talk about at the end to kind of finish positively. But this was the only positive from that series. I think, like, you look at the pitching performances, fine, but again, wasted. It looked for a hot second in that first game against KC. Oh yeah, look, they score six runs, but then again, look, it's just a guy who's been called up from AAA to make his first career big league start. Good on them for chasing him early, but when the real pitchers on Kansas City came in that series, the Jays weren't scoring any runs. And I don't know, it's early, it's only May, but when you put it all together in totality and you mix it together with last season and even some of what we saw in 2022, the inconsistencies, it's difficult to get optimistic about things getting better. You think that Bo and Vlad are going to turn it around. You just worry about George Springer given the age, but Bo and Vlad, they can't have an OPS of 600 something the entirety of the season. But then again, if those guys do heat it up eventually, are we sure we're going to see what we've gotten out of Dalton Barshow, Justin Turner, guys like that for the entirety of the season? So we've been talking since, it's been well over a year now that we've talked about what this offense is going to look when it's finally all clicking. Well, is it ever all going to click at the same time? I don't know. I'm skeptical.
Yeah, and I think it's understandable because, again, even though this is supposed to be the positive part of the show and we're going to talk about the five or under drought being broken, the guy who they scored four of those earned runs against has only pitched, including that game, 5 2/3 innings in his major league career, and he's 27 years old. It's not like they were going up there and, like you said, doing this off of some of Kansas City's actual competent arms. Like, Cole Reagans came in and, you know, kind of had his way with them. He struck out 9 over 6 2/3. Seth Lugo was unbelievable in his start. And again, these aren't even aces. These are not like top of the rotation guys. Like, Seth Lugo is a good journeyman pitcher, a run-of-the-mill journeyman pitcher, and he comes in and looks like a Cy Young guy because he's pitching against the Blue Jays. So that was just a frustrating week of baseball from the Toronto Blue Jays, specifically with the bats. I dug this up, and again, I guess it ties into our first down, which is the bats go completely silent. But there have been three games so far this year where the Blue Jays have won by more than four runs. Last year, they had four by this point, so it's not even like there's that big of a gap. And then I looked into, again, just going through box scores a little bit of their first, what would this be, 32 games I looked at. By this time last year, they had scored 6+ runs 10 times. This year, they've done it just 4 times, and 2 of them were in the first series of the season. So our down is just, again, we'll dig into it a little deeper. The bats are just dead right now. And I know John Schneider came out and said what he did and tried to preach patience once again. And the quote was, "It's going to come. It's May 1st. It will come. We will be better." That's what I can say to fans. I would hope our fans trust that we have really good players who understand they're not performing up to expectations. Like, again, I would have time for this if it hadn't been almost a year and a half now of us being frustrated with these bats.
This is the same sort of point that was a similar sort of point, the one that was made in the offseason, and this was like a big part of the sentiment about how the Blue Jays handled their offseason. There was, of course, the push to sign Shohei Ohtani, but that, after that, when it didn't happen, it was minor additions to the roster, 1-2-year contracts, short-term things, because the expectation is that there's going to be internal improvement from the players on the team. And we've seen that a little bit in some regards. I think Dalton Barshow's kind of the one guy where it's been, all right, you're clearly better this year than you were last year. But there was four names that it was all sort of built around. That was, if we get three or four of these guys rebounding, especially one or two, the Vladdy and George Springer are the two that really needed to turn around. It was Barshow, Kirk, Vladdy, and Springer. If you get three or four, you get those guys turning around, the team's going to be better. And so far, only one of them really has. George Springer at the top of the lineup just doesn't really look at all like who he was in his prime anymore. The bat speed is massively declined. He's not that same weapon right at the top. And Vladdy, it's just been, you know, it's been a slow and steady decline sort of since that breakout year in 2021. The season in 2022 was fine, and then last year it was a little bit less, and then this year it doesn't even look like, you know, the talk was supposed to be how this guy's going to anchor your offense. You get a big season from Vladdy, that'll be a game changer. And they just simply haven't had that yet. And then you add Bo Bichette in there, who had a really good year last year. He was one of their best hitters in 2023. You add him struggling to the mix too, and you have Bo, Vladdy, and George Springer all struggling. I mean, I'm not too nervous about Bo turning it around. You think back to 2022, and it was a cold streak all the way until August, and then he turned it around and had a great year, thanks largely to a really hot final month and a half, 2 months. So Bo's going to hit. He always has. But the other two, I sort of wonder, like, this is a team that was built around largely those three guys at the top. And if only one of them you can really truly believe of breaking out of their slump and having a strong year for the entirety of the year, if there's only one of them where you really believe that's going to happen, then you're in a bad spot. It's also getting, like, there was a quote from Atkins too. It was in the off season. He said, "Oh, look, we didn't make our," and this is paraphrasing, it's not a quote, it's "we didn't make big moves in the off season, a big addition, but we have the flexibility to make a big addition at the trade deadline." And look at all the teams that are solid right now. Look at how few teams it looks like are going to be selling. If the Jays put themselves in the spot where, all right, let's make our big addition in the middle of the season, like they did with Jose Barrios a few years ago, for example, then you put yourself in a pretty ugly spot, because there's a lot of teams that are going to be buying, not very many selling. It's going to be expensive to do this, and your prospect pool is already not that deep. So not exactly an ideal situation to be in, but then again, it's we're only a week into May. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. It is worth noting they are tied with the Oakland A's right now. So the talk of, like, I don't know. They're only two games under 500. And in today's Major League Baseball, like, again, you can be mediocre and go on to do good or great things. We've seen it year after year where, like, a random wild card three team has gone to the World Series every season. So I think right now it's incredibly premature on May 3rd to talk about something, but we'll save that conversation for a little bit. The second down we have from this series, and it really is, again, something, it feels like we have the same conversation every podcast, but, like, they're wasting incredible performances from their arms. And in a way, John Schneider is very lucky that they're getting these performances from their arms, because the losses don't feel as bad because they're three-run losses in a way. They're not, I shouldn't say they don't feel as bad. They're not as headline-grabbing or as demoralizing, because they're in every game, it feels like, until the sixth or seventh inning. If their arms weren't pitching the way that they are, and there were a lot more of those 12-2 losses, like the one we got to the Dodgers, instead of, you know, you're looking at the fact when they lost 3-4 to the Royals, it was 3-2, 3-2, 2-1. This time around, you know, 4-1, 6-1 aren't great either, but my point is, if the arms weren't doing what they were, I actually feel like we might have had a manager change already. Like, if they'd gotten blown out now, like, 8 or 9 times in their first 32 games and the arms weren't doing this, it would feel worse. It'd be grabbing more headlines and there'd be a lot more pressure on the front office.
Yeah, you can honestly make the argument that the Blue Jays, that they might actually be overachieving based on how they've played thus far. Like, their record right now of 15-17 is poor, but their run differential is 111 runs scored, 142 runs allowed, which is a Pythagorean win loss of 12 and 20. That's what their expected wins loss is based on how many runs they've scored. Ian Hunter pointed that out on Twitter during the week, and it kind of just illustrated that. Yeah, the Blue Jays, if you look at their talent, you look at on paper, yeah, they're underachieving based on how skilled they are. But when you look at their results and what they've done through these 32 games thus far and what their actual results are, the things that have actually happened, then they should probably be doing worse. And you look at the starts in this series, like, Jose Barrios had another good one and got saddled with the loss, just like last week. He pitched well and took his two losses this season, both come against Kansas City, and he's pitched well in both those games. In this one, the second game of the series, 7 innings, only 2 earned runs on 5 hits, 1 walk, 3 strikeouts. And then Chris Bassitt in the game after that, the afternoon game on Wednesday, he had a no-hitter going into, I think it was the 5th inning, or was it the 6th inning? He had a no-hitter going until that one, and Kansas City scored 3 runs in the 6th, kind of smacked the ball around, got a little bit of BABIP luck, and he wound up taking the loss as well, because the offense, as soon as Kansas City scored those 3 runs in the 6th inning, we all sort of knew, like, there's no way they're winning this thing. The Jays aren't going to score 4 runs in 4 innings at the end of the game. It's not really something they do. And I think that's the frustrating thing is, you know, the pitchers have come out and they've grinded through a difficult circumstance at the start of the season. Like, Kevin Gausman didn't pitch in spring training. He had one start right at the end and had to use the first half of April as his spring training. There was multiple injuries to the bullpen. Jordan Romano, Eric Swanson start the year on the injured list. Chad Green's on the injured list now. Like, there's multiple injuries of the pitching staff, and the pitching staff are still getting it done. So imagine if they hadn't been getting this pitching, or if there is a stretch during the season where the arms can't come through for them, they're going to have to lean on their bats. And I don't know how you do that. How can you look at this lineup and say, all right, like, you know, the pitchers can have a bad week, the pitchers can have a bad month? They can't. They're pitching in high leverage spots every single game. The starters are pitching in high leverage spots. When you're pitching in the second inning and you allow a leadoff double, it's a high leverage spot, because if the other team goes up 1 or 2 nothing, it feels like a huge lead. It's not what it used to be, when the Jays could be down 5 runs heading into the seventh and you'd be like, all right, a walk and a home run here, another solo bomb there, and they're right back in this thing. But you just don't feel that way right now.
It's also, again, incredibly taxing on your bullpen to not. And that's why I wanted to look up, and I talked about it earlier, like how many like blowout games they've had, because again, it's a long season. And if all your relievers and your good relievers also seemingly have to pitch every single night in high leverage spots, like at some point that is going to catch up to them. And, you know, maybe they don't get hurt, but they're going to get gassed at some point, just having to pitch as much as they are. So it is very, very annoying right now. Jose Berríos, you touched on him, AL pitcher of the month. His ERA, absolutely outstanding. It's just, you're at, from a fan perspective, it's ace level confidence. When it's a Berríos start day, you know the Blue Jays have a very good chance to win that baseball game. Granted, right now it feels like they just have a very good chance of winning it 2-0. But still, he's dialed in right now, and it's great to see.
He's been absolutely fantastic. He's been, I would argue, probably their MVP thus far. He's filled in on opening day when Gausman wasn't available, put a good start forward against Tampa Bay, and has been really good ever since then. There hasn't really been a blip on the radar for Jose Berríos. He's come in, he's given them innings, he gives them a chance to win every single time. It's unfortunate that after this, I guess you count March as part of his April, you count this as his first month. It's unfortunate you come out of that month pitching that well, and you still have 2 losses next to your name, both of them against Kansas City, both of them pretty much off of all the damage comes from a couple of swings. That rainy game in Kansas City, it was Sal Perez hitting that bomb, and then the game ends after 5 innings, you take the L. And this one, you go 7 innings and only allow 2 earned runs and still take the L. I think we both agreed earlier when we talked about this that Cy Young seasons kind of start with a narrative early on. And I think Berríos has a really good start here when you consider the context, like him coming out and being the opening day starter when Gausman was dealing with an injury and didn't have a spring training, and coming through for the Blue Jays and pitching as well as he had. I think that starts a narrative, and the fact that he was named pitcher of the month here kind of get things off on a good start. So I think this is the year that we'll see Berríos. I don't know if he'll wind up winning it, but I think he'll be the one that's in the mix for the Cy Young, like a top 5, top 3. I think that's my prediction.
Yep, and obviously getting this nod early on, again, helps that kind of case he'll be looking to build throughout the season. The third down we have is the fact that Yariel Rodriguez has hit the injured list. He's got some sort of back issue. They called it, what, thoracic spine inflammation. The shitty part about this, and maybe the or shitty concerning part, if I want to actually sound like a smart human for a second, the concerning part about this is he's been dealing with this issue kind of throughout the year, which is concerning with the when it's a back thing. Like, you'd hate for that to be a nagging thing.
Yeah, this is what he was dealing with during spring training, and this is what ultimately resulted in him having to start his year off in Buffalo, make a few outings there before he came up. This is the reason that the Blue Jays have Yariel Rodriguez on a pitch limit this season. I mean, that was a thing that kind of came out a week or two ago when he kind of hit the ground running and got everybody fired up. And there was talk, oh, is he going to stay in the rotation? Is he going to move to the bullpen? The reality is that this guy didn't pitch last year outside of a few starts in the World Baseball Classic. And then in 2022, when he did have his most recent full professional season, he was pitching in Japan as a late inning reliever, pitching only 1 inning per outing. So the fact that they want to stretch him out into a starter, it's kind of hard to imagine that he's going to just fill into the fifth spot for the entirety of the season and, you know, log a whole bunch of innings. It's probably just unrealistic to assume. So yeah, I guess this is another one of those examples. When we talk about the pitching staff, they've battled through already a challenge so far in March and April with a whole bunch of guys dealing with injuries, and you know they've done a really good job thus far, but they're going to keep having to dig into their depth, and eventually the pitching isn't going to be as good as it has been right now. No matter how good your pitching staff is, and the Blue Jays have a very good pitching staff, no matter how good it is, at some point it's going to get tired, it's going to get a little bit injured, and the bats need to step it up. And At some point, that has to happen. They can't go the entirety of the season without their bats getting hot all together once. And I don't know, there weren't very many times last year when the bats got hot and they were like, all right, the pitching doesn't have to be great right now because we're hitting, we're really on. But man, the pitching staff could really use that this year.
Yeah, they're taking on the Washington Nationals this weekend out in Washington. So the Jays will look to get things sorted out against a Nationals team that has actually been surprisingly average so far this season. We'll talk about that, get to a full preview. Anything else you wanted to touch on from the KC series, or do you want to move on to the Rosenthal thing?
I want to forget about the Kansas City series. The one positive out of this is that they are not facing Kansas City again during the regular season. That is a positive. We are done with the Royals now, which I think that is good.
An up we missed. We hit on it a little bit, but Danny Jansen coming back hitting two bombs. He's got three home runs in his first 30 ABs since coming off the IL. Good to see him swinging a solid bat. He's got an OPS above 1,000 again. Small sample size, but he's swinging a good bat.
Yeah, that's a positive one. I was actually looking today on FanGraphs. I was looking at who the Blue Jays wins above replacement leaders are, and Danny Jansen, despite having only played in 10 games so far, is second on the team. And wins above replacement among position players.
Every positive is just a negative at this point. It really is quite comical. Like, what are we doing? All right, we're going to talk about the Rosenthal thing, but first we're going to step aside for a quick break.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
All right, back on episode 210 of Blue Jays Nation Radio. We're going to get ready for this series coming up against the Nats in a second. There's an interesting conversation about who's going to be the starter on Sunday as well. But first, Ken Rosenthal was on his podcast is Fair Territory, but he does guest appearances on Foul Territory.
That's confusing.
I think that's the way it works. But anyways, Rosenthal was on a podcast that he does, and he suggested the Blue Jays could be a team that would be a surprise seller at the deadline. His quote was, the Jays have a couple of months before the deadline to assess who they are, and you can't assess just yet. I do think that's kind of important. He continued to say, but if they do not perform to their potential, if they're hanging around 500 or even below at the deadline, I don't care how close they are to a wild card. At some point, you've got to look yourselves in the mirror as a franchise and say, where are we going here? Are we going forward with this group? I want to talk about that part first, because I do think the Jays are in a bit of a unique spot as a franchise, because they are their own TV partner. They get that revenue straight up. And I think with what we know about how much one single playoff broadcast is worth to Sportsnet, especially considering they get their own playoff broadcast now, it's not like it was in years past where they got to, you know, simulcast the Fox one or TNT one or whatever it used to be. I think if they're at 500, if they're sniffing anywhere close to a wild card, I don't think they sell. I don't think ownership gives them the green light to sell off and punt on the season. I don't think they would add. I don't think we're talking about them trading an A-level prospect to try help this team, but I think they would try to get in if they're at 500. So again, Ken Rosenthal, one of the best insiders in the game. Who am I to sit here and argue with his reporting? But it felt like he was giving more of an opinion there, and I'll disagree with it and say if the Jays are close, I don't think they sell. If they're 500 at the deadline, they push forward and try to get in with 88 wins.
Yeah, I think I agree with you there. I think the Blue Jays are in a situation right now, especially consider the context, the renovations. Rogers put a lot of money into the stadium, and the expectation is that the seats are going to be full in September because the team is making a playoff push. If they're so bad at the trade deadline, like I'm talking well out of the wild card race, 10 games back with six teams or whatever to jump over to even get into the third wild card spot, maybe we could see them sell off some guys who are free agents at the end of this season. But if there's any suggestion among fans or whoever's paying attention that maybe they'll capitalize on a seller's market and try and move Bo or Vlad or somebody like that during the season so that you can maximize the trade, like, and give, you know, it'll be a year and a half of those two players if they were to move them at the deadline. I'd be shocked if that happened, just given the investment the Blue Jays have made in having a team that's competitive and interesting right now. Even if you can make the argument that, okay, yeah, look, the team's a dud, like they should blow it up and get a head start on their rebuild. Even if you are that type, then the top thing is like, look at the investment Rogers has made and what the Blue Jays expectations are. And it's pretty hard to punt that. And the other thing too, is that if the Blue Jays are going to move into a rebuild or a retool, is Ross Atkins going to be the one making the selling trades? Like it would be, he came in as the GM in 2016, had that team that he inherited. They slowly kind of did their thing and they moved into their rebuild. He's already had that much time. Is he going to be the one then, if the Blue Jays say, all right, this thing, it's not going to work, we're going to have to trade Bo and Vlad? I think it's going to come in the offseason. I don't think it's going to come in the season if it does happen. If it does happen, is Ross Atkins going to be the one who's allowed to make that trade? Personally, I would be shocked. I think that if this thing goes sideways, he's probably gone. But I mean, again, it's May. We have tons of time. But I think the story here more is that if the Blue Jays are mediocre, they'll probably be a team that stands pat and just doesn't do anything exciting at the deadline. I don't see them making a huge sale. Maybe it's, you know, if they're out and there's no way they can get back in, there's a few guys who are going to become free agents at the end of the season. Think about maybe Yusei Kikuchi, even Justin Turner, who they just signed. There's a couple of relievers there. Jimmy Garcia, Trevor Richards, Danny Jansen, I guess, though I still think he's a good candidate for an extension. Those are names we could see if they do a little sale, but I'd be shocked if it were the big names going during the summer. I think the Jays, if they're going to blow this thing up, they need to find a different GM and then they can go ahead and do that.
Yeah, I think sort of the order of dominoes would be domino one, the Jays slip hard out of it here at some point in the next month, 4 to 6 weeks, whatever it is. Ding, that falls and probably pushes John Schneider out the door. And I think what we'd see is, I don't think Ross Atkins would be allowed to make a full-time managerial change in the sense of going out, hiring someone, signing them to a three-year extension. I feel like we'd get something like a DeMarlo Hale or Pete Walker takes over on an interim basis for the Mattingly rest of the season. Or, oh yeah, Jesus Christ.
People
yeah,
will love that.
Yeah, people will go nuts for that one. Something like that would happen, and that manager would bring them to the end of the year. They would, you know, let this thing die out, and it would be full-blown, everybody's gone in the winter, and they go from there. I don't think we're going to see sweeping changes. Just to finish off the Rosenthal quote, he said, "This group, like all teams, has a limited shelf life. Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and shortstop Bo Bichette are free agents after 2025, and they haven't signed yet. I'm not even sure the Blue Jays want to go long-term with Guerrero Jr. after what they've seen from him recently." I mean, yeah, that's obvious. And I think Blue Jays fans, we've talked about it. Like, if Vladimir Guerrero Jr.'s name was anything other than Vladimir Guerrero Jr., I think the view on him around baseball would be a lot different. Like, he's had one good season so far, one great season so far in his career. I think it's obvious that you wouldn't want to go long-term with a guy like that, unless something crazy happens in the back half of this season and all of a sudden you're incredibly confident in him. I would be interested, you know, what are the markets for the relievers who become free agents after 2025? Romano, Meza, Swanson, like maybe there'd be one of those, not fringe contenders, but maybe I'll call them new contenders. And we're getting a look, if you're watching on the YouTube, at the 2025 free agents. You know, teams who want to contend this year and maybe want to buy this year without sacrificing a lot for rentals would maybe be in on guys like Mesa, Swanson, Romano. You know, maybe it even is a team like the Kansas City Royals, or I look to the NL, a team like the Cincinnati Reds who could maybe look to beef up their bullpen a hair. Maybe those guys have a market, but again, I just think that with Atkins at the helm, is he going to have sign-off to go move pieces like that from not just this year's roster, but next year's roster as well? I have a hard time believing that some major sell-off is coming. So I agree with you in that sense.
Also remember, like, when Atkins came in 2016, that the whole sentiment was the Cleveland Crew are going to come in here and they're going to blow up Alex Anthopoulos' lovable team. And that's what everybody was nervous about. But man, they tried to win in 2017. They didn't trade Josh Donaldson away. And then, you know, same thing. There was Marcus Stroman and Aaron Sanchez. They were under control. There was talk, hey, if the Jays blow it up, you can start things off on a good foot by trading all these guys. And they didn't. So I really do think that the Rogers has an expectation of team Blue Jays being a competitive team, and they're going to at least try. I think that the time when the blow up might come would be next year's trade deadline, when it's Bo and Vlad are half a year away from free agency, and then you also have the Romano, Mesa, and Swanson, like you mentioned. I think that's where it would be. I think for better or for worse, just like we saw with the first time around, they're going to try and make this thing competitive, even if it's not working. I don't think it's going to be, oh, geez, you know, we're four games back of the wild card in June and it's just not looking good. I don't think we can win the World Series. You better blow it up. It's going to be, it's going to take a lot more than that for Rogers to pull the plug on this.
The only thing I'll say to that is you're right. That was the approach in 2017. And I think we could look back and be like, I wonder how much differently the retooling goes if they pull the trigger. Do Atkins and Shapiro regret that? Do they sit? Are they going to, right? Are they going to sit there and be like, we tried this in 2017 and remember the rumors of like Donaldson for Jack Flaherty? How much different is the retool if you pull the trigger on that? Who knows what the offers were for Sanchez and Stroman at that point? So that would be my only concern, is that they're sitting there going, we're going to learn from our mistakes. We're going to pull the pin early on this and try to really get some big name young players in this organization. And maybe we're good again in 2 years and it's a quick, snappy little turnaround. I hope that's not the case. I don't think it would be the case, but I guess that would be, you know, if I were to play devil's advocate to it, the one argument you could make. But we'll see. We're so far away from that. Like, that's the other thing too. I was watching, it was one of those MLB talk shows, and they were talking about if the season ended today, the Texas Rangers would miss the playoffs. Can you believe it? And it's like, dude, it's May 3rd. We have 120 some baseball games left still to play. Like, what are we doing here? It is very early to be having these conversations, I think, is the point we should end this on, maybe.
Yeah, it's fun to indulge them just because this is the talking points right now. And it's valid to think about the Blue Jays doing a rebuild long term. Like, we talked about this in the preseason edition when Stoughton was on the show. It's a thing to talk about. But yeah, you're right. Like, it's important to sit back and be like, there's so much left to be played. Like, I think around this time last year it was into at least like mid late May, the Pittsburgh Pirates were one of the better teams in the National League. Like, so much is going to change. You have teams like Cleveland, Kansas City, Boston, Detroit that are all ahead of the Blue Jays in the standings. And it's like, I think Kansas City's looked pretty good. I think Cleveland's got a good pitching staff. I think Boston's got some good things on their roster. But are these teams actually all going to be good in August? Like, the Blue Jays are a team now. Like, we're used to the Blue Jays being a flashy and exciting, fun team. 2015, 2021, those are the teams that they were. And now this is a team that is supposed to be good over the course of a marathon. This is, you should see the Blue Jays and what makes them solid shine through during those months in July and August when it's dog days and the other teams are, you know, burning out a little bit more. Their pitchers aren't throwing as hard. Their batters have sore hands, you know, that kind of thing. When the dog days of summer show up, you'd think a good pitching and defense team like the Blue Jays that can hit some home runs will start to do better. But I don't know. I understand why people after this first month aren't very optimistic, because it's there's a difference between being like, oh yeah, if the Blue Jays pull it together, then they're going to be one of the best teams in baseball and they can win it all. But right now it looks like if the Blue Jays pull it together, they can be the second wild card team and go into a 3-game series with whoever, and then, you know, losing the ALDS. It's pretty hard to get excited about them going on any kind of deep run right now, but I keep circling it back to negative when you try to make it positive. But yeah, it's hard right now. It's hard right now to have good vibes.
Yeah, and another thing too, like I like that point. This is a team that is built to be good over the course of a marathon. And you look at last year, remember we kept saying like, oh, just wait, the bats will get hot and they'll win 9 or 10 in a row at some point. And they never did. They won 6 in a row in April, and then their second longest streak was a 5-gamer in August or September. I think it was September. Yeah, it was September when they beat the Red Sox and Yankees over the course of 5 games. And aside from that, it was just like, man, they'd go win 2 or 3 and then lose one. Then they'd go lose 2, but then they'd win 4. And like, I feel like again this year, as boring as that is, we're probably going to get that same thing where I don't think there's a magical 12-game run here that really draws everybody in and gets a bunch of fans on the bandwagon and gets everyone all excited. I really think it'll just be like a handful of stretches of them going 7-3 while everyone else is going 6-4, and they'll just chisel their way up the standings if they're going to get back in it. That's kind of the path I see them taking.
Yeah, all those, like, I remember last year it was, we did this quite a few times, and it'd be, oh man, the Blue Jays look terrible lately. They've lost their last 2 games, and then you'd go and look, and it's like, oh yeah, they're 6-10, 6-4 in their last 10. This really isn't that bad. And that was almost like, that was the story of the season, and I think it's probably going to be like that again this year. A 12-game winning streak for this version of the Blue Jays would be a weird thing. Like, imagine how stressful and frustrating a 12-game winning streak among this team would look like. Like, it's honestly kind of funny to imagine.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, who knows? Maybe they do start one of those this weekend. They're out in Washington to take on the Nationals, and it's a Nationals team that, I guess, similar to the Jays, have been, you know, pretty average this year. They've struggled to score runs. They've only put 119 across the plate so far this season. Granted, better than the Blue Jays at 111, but they're 15-16, just a hair below 500 again, just like the Toronto Blue Jays. So it should be an interesting series out in Washington. They're 5-10 against teams who are above 500 on the year. Jays are 8-11 in that regard. So this is a series the Jays should be able to win a couple of, especially when you look at the starting pitching matchups. And at least the first two, Jays are going to go with Yusei Kikuchi in the opener. The Nats are going to go with Patrick Corbin, who is, I would describe him as painfully inconsistent, I think, when you go and look through his game logs. Like, he had a great start a couple weeks ago against the Dodgers through 5 1/3 of shutout ball. But in his other two recent starts, he gave up, you know, 4 runs in 4 innings, 5 runs in 6 1/3, 7 runs in 5 2/3. Like, that shutout against the Dodgers is the only time this year he's allowed less than 4 runs in an outing. So if the bats can't wake up against Patrick Corbin, they're dead. Maybe I'll say they should sell if they can't hit off Patrick Corbin.
Yeah, if in 2024 the bats aren't coming alive in that situation, then you're not looking good. Washington has 15 wins on the season, but 4 of them came against the Miami Marlins. So, I mean, I made this exact same point when the Jays faced Kansas City for the first time, and I said, oh, well, they've racked up a few of their wins against the Chicago White Sox, so maybe they're not actually that good. But I'm not going to curse myself with that jinx right before this series again. But a random point that I will bring up is that, remember back in 2015, and speaking of teams with slow starts and being bad and whatnot, very, very different context, I understand. But remember back in 2015 when the team was off to an up and down start, and I think it was June, they traveled out to Washington to face the Nationals. And this is when the Nationals were really good. They had, I don't know if they were really good, but they were good. It was Bryce Harper's MVP season, and they had Max Scherzer on the team as their ace. They pitched really well, and the Jays had that team nap. And then that kind of weirdly turned around this season. Kevin Pillar hit that home run off of Scherzer, and then Mark Burley threw a really good game. I think it was a doubleheader or something like that. My memory's a little bit foggy on this, but trip to Washington in 2015 was a season changer. So contexts are wildly different, but let's tell ourselves that they're going to have another team nap together here in 2024 and suddenly remember how to hit.
Kevin Gausman versus Jake Irvin in the second game of the series. Irvin, similar to Patrick Corbin, has been inconsistent this year. He's had a couple of outings where he gets hit somewhat hard. He's had a handful of really, really good outings where he goes 6 strong and only allows a handful of hits. Like, he had a one hitter against, I mean, granted it was against Oakland, but he still had a one hitter against Oakland earlier in the season. So Gausman versus Irvin again, like, these are games the Toronto Blue Jays should win when you consider those matchups. All their bats need to do is wake up, and we've hammered that so far. The third game of the series is going to feature Mackenzie Gore for the Nationals. He was a big part of the Juan Soto deal from a couple of years ago coming over from San Diego, and he looks strangely a lot. If you go to his MLB page, he looks like he could be Whit Merrifield's kid. I was looking at his numbers, and I was like, fuck, who does this guy look like? And then I just had him side by side with Whit Merrifield, and it's like, oh my God, do they ever look like the exact same person? Anyways, that's totally unrelated. He's having a somewhat decent season. But the Jays don't have their starter listed for Sunday. It's got to be Alek Manoah, right?
Yeah, you'd think. There was, I think it was Scott Mitchell of TSN had a note during the week. It was after Yariel Rodriguez was put on the injured list. He had a note saying the Jays are going to go and look for like a triple A, quad A depth kind of starter because there aren't really any options for them right now to fill into that spot. But it looks like it's going to be Alek Manoah, you'd think, because of course he came out of, or he had the injury in spring training and then he went on the rehab assignment. That's going to be coming to an end right away. So they have to make a decision. Either they're going to roster him, they're going to activate him from the injured list and put him on the roster, or they have to activate him from the injured list and send him down to the minors. He can't just keep pitching on his rehab stint. While he's on his rehab stint on the injured list, of course, he's getting paid his big league salary. If they option him, just like last year, he'll go down to the minor league salary. It's been a really mixed bag. It's been a mixed bag for Alek Manoah. The most recent start, he was really good. And this is what I think gives people the idea that he's probably going to get called up for this start in Washington to see what he's got. He went six innings, allowed just one earned run. It was a solo home run, two hits, walked two guys, and struck out 12. Definitely his best result of his stint with Buffalo. There was another good start mixed in there too back on April the 19th. But if you look, if you're watching on the YouTube, we've got a graphic up. There was, he allowed six earned runs over one and two third in his first starting with Buffalo. The next one after that, three and one third, four earned runs. Then there was the aforementioned five and two thirds innings, solid start. And then he followed up the solid start with three innings pitched, six earned runs. Now, to be fair to him in that one, it was cold, awful conditions pitching outside in Buffalo. So maybe not the best representation of what might happen, but that's the thing, is it's been such a mixed bag for Alek Manoah. Even when you get a good one, you don't really know what's coming next. There's a lot of people suggesting, all right, he's pitching, he's had that good start in Buffalo, now his best one, keep him down and see if he can do it a few times before calling him back up. But unfortunately, they don't really have that many options right now, because if it's not Manoah coming up to fill Yariel Rodriguez's spot on Sunday, Bowden Francis is still on the injured list as well. The next guy is Paolo Espino, probably, when you look at 40-man roster names. Like, there isn't really a lineup of guys on the 40-man roster who are likely to come and give you five or six innings in Washington. At the very least, I think if Manoah is called up to pitch, at least he can, you know, log some innings, which I guess is a positive thing. But if this were an ideal situation, I think it would make sense for the Blue Jays to give him some more starts in AAA, but this is not an ideal situation. The pitching depth is being tested, and you're probably in a spot where you just have to call him up and hope for the best at this point.
Would be a revenge game for Espino, who started 39 games over his Nationals career. So maybe that's an angle, but I think it's Manoah. I also think, you know, from the mental side of it, is it better to throw Manoah out there on the road? Like, the other side is if this one goes bad, if this call-up goes bad, it's over, right? He's down in the minors for probably the rest of the season. And I think this storyline's dead, or they're trading him. Like, so maybe I shouldn't care about that side of things, but there's just a part of me that goes, is there less pressure if he's not in the dome, right? If he's out on the road, road crowd, Sunday afternoon in Washington, like, I can't imagine it's going to be a rambunctious stadium that's getting on him and jeering him. Like, probably won't give a shit. So why not start him in that game if you're going to do it at some point?
Yeah, and then after that, you also look like they have a few off days next week. They got a pretty light week next week. It's an off day on Monday, and then they play a two-game series in Philadelphia, and then it's another off day on Thursday before they go back home to start things off against the Minnesota Twins. So I guess then it kind of allows you to have a situation where you can move things around a bit, and if he doesn't do well, then you can use a four-man rotation for a minute before you look for your solution at fifth starter. I guess that's a positive, but yeah, no, I'm kind of with you. Like, think back to last year, he got called up right before the All-Star break, I think it was. They were playing in Detroit, and he pitched a really good game against the Tigers on the road. I agree. I think bringing him back to a situation where he's pitching in Toronto and the fans are going to get fired up one way or the other, it's probably higher emotions than it would be pitching on a Sunday afternoon in Washington, where it shouldn't be that intense. I guess that's a good environment to get going, but honestly, it's really hard to say with Alek Manoah. The results are just so sporadic and so inconsistent. It's so hard to say what to expect. But like I said before, it's at least he can probably come up and give the team some innings. And I think in this situation right now, you honestly just have to kind of view it as that way. Who on the 40-man roster can give us innings? And right now it's Alek Manoah. And as a result, with the other two depth starters on the injured list, this might just afford him a situation where even if he's not pitching that well, say it's, you know, six innings, five earned ones against Washington, that might just be good enough for right now because the options just aren't that good.
Yeah. Weird start times in this one. 6:45 tonight Eastern, that is. Tomorrow it's 4:05 Eastern. Then they wrap it up with a 1:35 Eastern first pitch on Sunday in Washington, which again could be the return of Alek Manoah. I sent you guys pictures of Mackenzie Gore and Whit Merrifield. They look like the same person. Brett, our producer, texted back. He said, "That's just Whit Merrifield twice."
It really does. I had never seen this, and it really does. This looks like Mackenzie Gore was made in a lab with some DNA from Whit Merrifield. That's interesting. That's wow.
All right. Well, that's what I bring to the table on this podcast. That's a wrap on episode 210. Coombsy, enjoy the baseball this weekend.
Best wishes.
Thanks for tuning in to Blue Jays Nation Radio. Don't forget to like and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
When it comes to your finances, you think you've done it all. You've saved, you've researched, and you've invested all that you can. Now it's time to take those investments to the next level by using the brand behind every great investor, Yahoo Finance. As America's number one finance destination, Yahoo Finance has everything you need, whether you're a seasoned trader or just dipping your toes into the market. Join the millions of investors who trust Yahoo Finance to guide them on their financial journey. For comprehensive financial news and analysis, visit yahoofinance.com. The number one financial destination, yahoofinance.com.